On this episode, we talk about self-care, and our guest, Dr. Jamika, shares with us tips and strategies.
Video recordings of this podcast can be found on raisingequity.org and Raising Equity on YouTube.
Hey, folks, I'm Dr. Kira Banks. Welcome to Raising Equity. On this episode, we're going to talk about self-care with a professional, Dr. Jamika, who is a psychologist. She also sees individual clients, does forensic assessments, and you can also find her on socials. She has some nice gems and nuggets for us. And so welcome to this episode, Dr. Jamika.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I want to start off first with this question about like, why this focus on self-care? Is it new? Are we just now seeing it more because people are talking about it on social media? What's up with this focus on self-care?
Well, it's not new, but I think it's great that people are talking about it on social media. It's been around forever, but unfortunately, women of color are kind of just now getting there. And what I see in practice is women struggle with taking care of themselves. They find it difficult to take time out of the other things they're doing, whether that's work, taking care of children, spouse, partner, everything else. It's hard for them to carve out time just to prioritize themselves. Many times they just feel selfish for doing it.
That's what I was going to ask. I was thinking, are we socialized as women to see that care for self as taking away from others? Because we're socialized to see our primary role as being outward focused rather than inward focused?
Yes, I think we are. I think we, many of us are, not all of us, but I think we live in a society that tells women to put everybody else first and not themselves. And it really depends on where you come from, like geographically, what part you grow up in, if you grew up in this country or not, what your family is like, what messages you get from family, religion. And for a lot of Black women in particular, they grow up in Baptist households, Southern Baptist for me, which is the church will tell you, take care of everybody else. And the church will make you believe that you're not a priority.
So this intersection of, like you said, geography, religion, kind of the cultural factors in your family really can influence that. And as you're talking, it makes me think about this idea of the like strong Black woman schema, right? Mm-hmm. The superwoman. Mm-hmm. And so we see that in the Black community, even outside of church. And so then like, if you have a religion that's also telling you that, it's like compounded. So how do people typically realize that they need to engage in self-care? Is it often that people get to a breaking point where they are feeling like no more? Or how do we help people help themselves before they get to that breaking point?
It would be great if we could. But what I found with a lot of women of color is they get to that breaking point. They're burnt out. They're sick. They're exhausted. Usually a diagnosis happens. Like a medical diagnosis occurs and they're like, you know what? I got to take a step back. Or something, some injury is something major. They usually don't come to that epiphany on their own because they're too busy to sit and really come with it. Sometimes social media influences people. Sometimes it's a therapist. Sometimes it's a doctor. But it's usually not them just sitting in their home on Saturday like, you know what? I'm going to make more time for myself. It's usually not that way.
Yeah. And I think that's why these conversations are so important. Because maybe it will catch someone before they hit that point.
We hope.
Yeah, you're right. And I do think time of life also has a big role in it. I don't know about for you, but when my first child went to college, mm-hmm. I didn't realize how much of a shift that would be in my mm-hmm. energy. Like I was like, I didn't realize how much of my brain space he took up. Mm-hmm. And so then when he was gone, like I'm happy that he's at college and you're doing his thing and living his life and growing. But it was almost a feeling of like, what do I do with this time and energy? And mm-hmm. so for me, it was a conscious decision. Like work is not getting this. No one else is getting this. How am I going to give it to myself? But I don't feel like there was a conversation about that. Like I told my friends who had kids who went to college, I was like, you didn't tell me. Those transition moments, I think, also give us an opportunity as women in particular mm-hmm. to think about like the things on our plate and how we prioritize ourselves, like you said.
Yeah, so that's one of them. That's a transition moment. Like it's one of those phases, like your child going to college or your child moving out, whatever the case is. For me, it was when I got a divorce, like 10, 11 years ago, mm-hmm. because that was my signal to like, girl, take care of yourself. Like who else is going to do it? Nobody else is going to say, you know what? You know, do these things. So mm-hmm. I just made time. at that point because it was minus a spouse. So just like you said in the transition, that gave me more time in some respects. So I was able to kind of implement it more than my children were smaller. And then when my oldest son went to college, that was a big point as well because I was like, uh-oh, all this time, now what am I going to do with it? And now that they're both in college, I'm like, uh-oh, more time. Like, what am I going to do with it?
Yeah.
But it also, as a woman, signals you, that's like a red flag to tell you, you know what, how much energy were you devoting to that in the first place?
Exactly.
A lot. What percentage of your brain space was taken up on a daily basis? And it could have been, what, 50, 60, 45? It's a lot.
Why are you so loud?
It's a lot.
Right.
It's a lot.
And so that's part of why I realize now as I get older, right, like, I try, you know, you try not to sound like the old auntie or the, you know, old woman telling, you know, well, hey, just keep living, baby. But I try to share those stories because I think there's a way that I could have had a better balance before, right? Like you said, we often don't stop and reflect, or we think it's a badge of honor to focus so much of our attention and care externally. Yeah.
It is. And then when you have children, especially when they're younger, you're always afraid of what's going to happen if you don't do X, Y, and Z. Oh, if I don't feed them this food, they're going to be this. They're going to have bad diets. If I don't put them in these activities, it's going to be this. If I don't make sure I help them with their homework, it's going to be this. So it's always something.
Yeah.
And typically, whenever shit falls out and the kids suck, end up in jail, they're going to blame the mom.
Yes, yes. And I think some of us, so many of us are doing the best we can. I remember there were moments where I told myself, you know, we all could be in therapy for something.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't parent with this fear that like something's going to happen and my kids are going to have it. Well, cause we all have something, either content that happened when we were kids or just life happens.
Something.
And so even that piece around, like, as a mom feeling so responsible for everything about our children,
yep,
it's a lot to, like, loosen up because you feel it.
You feel it. And that, I will say, that's one thing I don't see the same with white women.
Oh, really?
No.
Okay.
They, for whatever reason, if it's because the spouses that they have, the families they come from, the support they have in their communities, their families, they don't feel that same weight. They feel weight, but it's not as heavy as the weight that we feel.
I wonder if it's that layer of, you know, you think about raising Black children in a society that arms them.
Mm-hmm.
If it's that layer of like, this is dire because it's dire.
But when you think about equity, that's huge.
Yeah. It's a
like,
big stressor.
That's very different. Like the lives and the mental energy that's devoted on a day-to-day basis of some women versus other women. That's a lot. And
I
think when you sit back and add it all up, the cumulative effect is huge, which is why I think women need self-care more.
Okay. Okay. What do people get wrong about self-care?
You know, I think what women get wrong about self-care is that they feel like they need to schedule it in when they have time.
Okay.
Whereas on the other hand, you're supposed to, it should be a core of your daily, weekly habits. Just like you schedule in work, just like you schedule in maybe your commute home or picking up your children, you have to schedule in self-care on a regular basis. It shouldn't be something that's special, like shouldn't be something that you have to reward yourself with. You know what? I worked 50 hours this week. I'm going to reward myself with a massage. That should be a regular thing, a normal thing.
Okay. So you're not saying don't schedule it in. You're saying don't let it be the kind of leftover time. And so if you're a person who schedules in meetings, workouts, you need to schedule in that self-care because it should be core, not an extra.
Exactly. Yeah. It should be a part of your weekly habits.
Yeah.
Because if it's not, typically it's not there.
Yeah.
If you don't put it in, it's not going to be there. Something else will end up taking up that space.
Yeah. No, I feel that definitely. And I think that when we do those maybe extra special things like a massage or the spa or whatever it is, if we're doing the self-care daily, those special things are even more rejuvenating.
Yes.
But if we only do it, like we wait till we're stressed and we give ourselves the scraps, a 50-minute massage ain't gonna do it. 80 ain't gonna do it, right?
Exactly.
Like we need to think about it on a more consistent basis. I'm with you.
Yes. Yeah. So I think that's one of the mistakes. Other mistakes is that people feel like self-care has to be expensive.
Hmm.
And it doesn't have to be. Like it doesn't, you don't have to go pay for a massage. You can, if you want to invest, you can buy a massage gun and do it yourself or get somebody around you to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can buy some type of massage oil and do it on yourself. Or you could buy a foam roller for $10 and massage yourself. I mean, you don't have to pay for everything.
Yes.
So or people, listening to music is free.
Yep. Yep. People feeling like, oh, I can't do it because I can't access it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I remember there was a supervisor I had in grad school. And one of the things they talked about was like bibliotherapy or mm-hmm. music therapy. Just having clients cultivate either books or music or things that, right, we have access to. We have mm-hmm. on our shelves or we have on our phones now. Like, what is the playlist that you need to make sure you experience daily or, right? Like, what, and to think about that, what you need to feed you.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a hard one for women too, because in order to identify and realize what feeds you, you have to have what? Time.
You just slow down and do it.
You slow down. And women are just going.
Yeah.
They don't slow down to even have time to come up with those things.
You're right. And you know, it's funny. I realized this kind of happenstance. Like, of course I knew the conversation about self-care were happening, but I have a friend who wrote this book. It's a year of self-love journal.
Mm.
Yep. So it's 52 weeks and prompts and practices for loving who you are. And so I bought a number of the books to support the friend who wrote it and was going to gift it to people in my life and happened to take a picture on social media. And the response in the comments, where do I buy this? Oh, thanks for sharing. You know, just so many questions and comments and kind of excitement. Oh my, I've ordered mine. And so I thought, well, if people want to talk about this, let's talk about this. So I started kind of a virtual book club of like, all right, as I go through the weeks, let's go through the weeks together. And people have had a really huge response. And I heard you have an offering that's similar, different, but like about self-care and thinking about how to cultivate that. Tell me about it.
Yeah. So I have a self-care club.
Okay.
And same way, like kind of stumbled up on it was talking to my followers on social media about, hey, what do you want? What do you think about this? And people just really jumped on it. And I was like, oh, I didn't know. I mean, I know what I know from my practice, what I see with my clients, but I had no idea that the issue was as widespread as it was until I got the response. And I see that more with busy working women, just struggling to take care of themselves, tired, burnout. So the response was great. So then we developed a self-care club. So every week, people who join, women who join, will receive some tip, activity, worksheet, guided meditation, live exercise, something that's going to help them on their self-care journey. And sometimes it's going to be an affirmation. Sometimes it's going to be an affirmation kit. A lot of things. But for those who join soon, they will get a self-care startup kit, which will include a few different things to get them started up on their journey. Because I have found in therapy with women, they're like, okay, where do I start? Like, what's the first thing that I do? What do I do? What is this going to do for me? And I think the other great thing about my club is that it also comes with an online community. So once you join, it'll be access to the other members. You'll be able to comment, share your stories, your tips, things that have worked for you, things that have not worked for you. I will also be a part of the community because in a sense, I'm going to be going on this journey with them because I'm not there yet either. Like I do my own self-care that I've done for years, but the thing about self-care is it's never stale.
Yeah.
You have to keep evolving and progressing and things change as your needs change, as your situation, your family changes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to be on this journey too, because I don't have it all figured out. I'm still working on how to balance like work and life and what not to do. Because I think the unfortunate thing about a lot of women of color, especially Black women, is we've been socialized from our families and our culture to feel like work, work, work.
Yeah.
And it's like this traumatic response to what if I don't work? What's going to happen to me if I don't work, if I don't achieve, if I don't do? And it doesn't feel right for a lot of busy working women to sit their ass down. But a lot of times that's what they need to do. They need to learn how to do it in ways that work for them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm so glad you're offering this. How can people get connected and be a part of the club?
So they can either go find me on social media, like on Facebook, Dr. Jamika, or Instagram, same thing. Or you can just go to my business website, which is www.emergencepsychservices.com. Under membership, you'll find how to join the club. And from there, you'll get something every week and you'll see more information there.
That's great. And one piece about that that I think is really important to note is this communal aspect, right? And so I've been thinking a lot about that. I was sick over the holiday break and ended up sitting my ass down and doing some reading that I'd been meaning to get to. And because I had been seeing so much conversation about self-care and referencing Audre Lorde's quote around self-care being an act of warfare, right? Mm-hmm. Self-preservation, act of warfare. I wanted to understand the context within which she said that. So I read her book, Burst of Light, and it was about her battle with cancer. And that's where this quote comes from. And what I was struck by is I think that in some ways in our society, the kind of self-care industry has framed it as this thing that we do to ourselves, for ourselves, for the sake of like an individualistic aim or goal. And reading her book and her thinking, it was very clear to me that she was saying self-care is an act of warfare so that I can show up again tomorrow in community and we can fight like hell.
Yes. And that's more of my take on it. That's how I see self-care. And I think if we go back 20, 30 years, you watch commercials, white women getting massages, they're at the spa, they got the towel wrapped up, they got somebody rubbing oils on them. That's the image of self-care. And that's really not it at all. It's really about how do you take care of yourself? How do you pour into your own cup? How do you make it so that you're full so that you can help those around you, right? Because you can't feed other people or pour into other people if your cup is empty. So that's what I see it as. I do see it as an act of resistance for women of color because we've been told so long that we're not important enough to deserve it. So I think it is resistance in that way. So I think it's both. I mean, it's resistance. I also feel like it's a radical way of healing. And I think women have to start seeing healing as something that they have the initiative to do themselves. They're empowered to do this. You don't need somebody else to come in and do it for you. You don't have to be rich to do it. You don't even have to have that much time, but you can make yourself a priority. And for, especially for busy moms with daughters, this is key because you really want to show your daughters that they deserve to take care of themselves. You want to show them what this can look like. You don't want to see them go down the same road that many of us go down, work, 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 and do, and then they're burnt out later.
Yeah. No, that's real. It's important for us to be able to model that and not have the story of self-care or the visual of it stop at that surface act, but to even talk about, you know, so we do this so that we can be in community together, so that we can show up and support each other, so that we can literally sometimes feed each other.
Yes.
And so that I felt like that conversation, like pulling the arc further beyond the act of I'm doing this thing, but for the sake of what, resonated with me as I was reading the book and as I've been thinking about this concept that, yes, it's about me, but it's about me in community and me in context. And as a Black woman, I don't lose sight of that. Like, it's about community. It's about the collective. And so there, I have seen, and I didn't have words for it until more recently, like this push and pull around like rest is resistance, self-care, like whatever we're calling it in the moment, that I think some folks stop the conversation at the act rather than talk about what the act then allows us to do and how it allows us to be in service. And it's, I don't mean that in a way to like put pressure on people, like do self-care so you can work, but it's a different kind of, I don't know if that makes sense. Like it's a different kind
communal.
Of
communal. It's collective.
Work. Yeah. Collective.
It's collective.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, as Black women, we are a collective culture. We're
Absolutely.
Collectivists. We believe in not just the individual.
Yeah.
Which is the other thing that's a really good part of the club is you're going to have a community.
Exactly.
It's not just you doing things.
In but isolation.
You're going to connect with other women who have the same struggles.
And you're going to learn from them.
You're going to learn and you're going to be able to give and share with them. Because for some people and for a lot of us, really, the self-care aspect of that is just being able to sit down and have a conversation with another woman, another sister, give to her something maybe you wish you had been given, which is the name of my club. It's called the Sister Sanctuary, Sister ending in A-H. Mm-hmm. So the Sister Sanctuary is where we can all come and find space, healing, and time, and community, because that's what we need. That's probably what most of us are missing in the world. So we have to get it from somewhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think about historically, in my family, every Sunday we were over at our grandparents' house, sitting around the kitchen table. You know, the women would be sitting around and talking, and we don't have those spaces as consistently anymore. So we do have to be intentional about creating them. So I'm so glad.
And we're hurting. We're hurting without it.
Yes.
Because you know, you've seen like the APA stress survey that they do every year. Like people are really stressed, and also people are very lonely.
Yes.
Social media is not fueling loneliness. It's not helping people feel connected in that way. It's giving you something to look at, something to scroll, something to compare yourselves to, but people aren't finding connection, love, and kindness in social media. They just aren't. So we have to find ways to give that to people, because we all need that.
And to give it to ourselves.
Yes.
To cultivate that internally and not wait, like you said, for someone else to tell you. And I think the other thing I'll say about the communal piece of your club, it's so important, because sometimes if you see someone who you look up to and it's like, well, they're taking time, if they're giving themselves permission, it then gives me permission as well. So it's like that vicarious learning that happens. So I'm so glad you're offering that.
That's a good point too. Sometimes people do need permission.
Absolutely.
And when you think about how most of us grew up, like I grew up in a big family, really big by most standards. Like my mother had 15 brothers and sisters.
Wow.
Yeah. So my grandmother had 16 children, and which means I have a lot of cousins. I probably have 30 something first cousins. And most of the time on the weekends, I can't even say just weekends, during the week, we're all down at my grandmother's house, because my grandmother is just the sweetest, most loving person we all knew. So I spent so much time with my first cousins, and I had another set of cousins in Chicago. So to this day, we're all extremely close and we still keep connected a lot, but it's because of the time we shared growing up as children. So people need that sense of, this is my tribe. This is who I am. This is what I need. They look just like me. We're all doing this together. Sometimes it's easier when you feel like you have people that are kind of pushing you along and are doing it with you.
Yeah.
Because like I said, I'm doing it too. Mm-hmm. All these things I'm going to be having in the club, I'm going to be doing them with the people too, because I need to feel better. I can think about one story when I was married to my first husband. My ex-mother-in-law at the time told me, I told her I was going to get a massage. And she was like, why would you do that? You have children. And I was like, oh, and because I'm a little, you know, quick with the mouth. At the time, I said, don't get mad at me because I'm doing something you should have done.
Oh, what'd she say?
Because that's the truth. Oh, she got quiet. Oh, but I'm sure her eyes said she wasn't quiet though.
Right.
But it was true, because I was like, oh, like this is what we're up against.
Right.
Sometimes you'll be in spaces with women who haven't done self-care, and they'll be looking at you like, who do you think you are? Why are you doing it? In reality, they should have been doing it too.
Yes.
But generationally in society, they just didn't have those opportunities then.
Yeah.
So don't let that stop you from doing it. Even that, I mean, even those around you can sometimes try to stifle your efforts.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming to share not only your ideas about self-care, but also information about the club, because it's so important. And given the context of the world we live in, we need to make sure we're loving on ourselves, being in community, so that we can show up and be a part of that resistance.
Yes. And my message would be to women, take care of yourself. Don't wait for somebody else to do it, because you know what? They won't. But you can. You can do it. You can start today and you can keep it going. Mm-hmm. So don't start and then drop it off. That's the purpose of the club. I want to make sure people are reminded every week, this is something for you, and don't forget.
Yes. Yes, I was reading somewhere that was talking about discipline is a form of self-love. If you can have discipline around things that take care of you, that's loving you. Mm-hmm. And so rather than think, oh, I got to do this thing, be like, I get to. And being in that practice actually is a way to love yourself consistently.
Yes.
Like, we wouldn't hug our kids 1 week and then not.
Exactly.
Right? Like, we wouldn't withhold that love from them. So why do we withhold it from ourselves?
And lots of times what I find in therapy is because women don't value themselves enough. They don't think they're important enough to spend 1 hour a week, 1 hour a day, mm-hmm. which is very, it's sad to think of it, but it's true.
It is. Well, thanks for joining us. I really look forward to hearing more about how the club goes. Then yeah, maybe we'll reconnect as we go on this book club journey, this self-care club journey, and share some stories as the year rounds out.
It's going to be awesome.
It is.
So make sure you join the Sista Sanctuary.
Wonderful. And I want to just name that you are worth the time. And so if, as we were talking, you felt like, you know, sometimes people say, if you can't say amen, say ouch. If what we were saying kind of hit you in a way and like, oh gosh, maybe I need to think about that. You know, take some time and reflect and connect with a couple of the resources that we've shared with you today. But thanks for joining us on Raising Equity.